Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
The Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
We definitely need to be safe, but now that we have kids, we take it obviously even further. We need to make sure that it's safe, but we're not just a same-sex couple. We're a same-sex Jewish couple, mm-hmm. and Jews have the anti-Semitism that's been on the rise these last couple of years is scary.
Yes. Welcome to the Queer Family Podcast. My name is Jamie. I'm your host, and you are tuning in to the Queer Family Podcast Pride Extravaganza. That means that the entire month of June, Pride Month, we are pushing out double the episodes, and the episodes we have shared so far are amazing. The folks who came in to share their stories are all change makers, are all using visibility to make this world a better place for everyone. And I am here for it, and I am here for them. And I'm still in shock that all of these amazing, 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 amazing guests said yes, including the ones that are today's episode. Let me just tell you who it is right now, and then I'll get to the other business. Britt and Sydney Sharon, AKA the Sharon Moms on social media. They are very visible on social. They share their lives. They are two moms who made their three babies through IUI and reciprocal IVF. A nice lesbian story coming at you. And they are very open about their queerness, their queer journeys, and also the fact that their Jewish faith plays a really important role in their lives. And they share what it means to them, what everything means to them, openly and honestly. And I can't wait for you to hear their story because they're bomb. I love them. They're my new BFFs, but they don't know it. But before I roll the tape for that, I do want to tell you a little something. I have a proud mama moment coming at you. Now, a lot of you, like y'all know that I'm always saying, I need to make enough money on this podcast so I could quit my day job. The truth is, I don't want to quit my day job. I actually really love my day job because I work for an organization called National Dance Institute that basically reaches the lives of over 6,000 children in New York City public schools a year through the art form of dance. It's a really fantastic program. I'm a teaching artist with them. I feel very passionate about this program. And my children's school is one of the only schools in our neighborhood that does not have our program. And I have been working really hard to get NDI, is what it's called, in my kids' school, like since my daughter started in pre-K. She's in fourth grade now. She is finally in the program because they have like a special Saturday program. So she's in there. She was in the big show this past weekend. Very big deal for all of us. My son was in it too, actually. She took it upon herself to type a letter and print it to her principal saying, please come to my show. I would really love you to. And please, I would love to have NDI in our school. Could you please do that? She did this all on her own. She put the flyer for the show in there. And then Saturday comes around. It's our third show. And I get an email from our principal. Hi, Jamie. I'm going to come to the NDI show. First of all, she came. She brought little gifts for my kids. And then she signed up for NDI in the school. I told Rose, I was like, Rose, you did that. You did that. She's like, I did that. I did. She is so proud of herself. And I am so proud of her for just taking initiative and thinking, I'm going to make a change. I'm going to make a positive change in my school community. And I think this is important and I want this to happen. She also put like subtle reminders about Pride on the envelope. She was like, and I put some rainbows on the envelope just to remind her about Pride. We also did a really great job of getting like better Pride celebrations in our school too, which is pretty awesome. So I'm just like having such a proud mama moment about the awesome individual my daughter with two moms is turning into. She's turning into a little change maker herself. And I feel good about that. I feel real good. Anyway, okay, enough about me. Before I roll the tape, just remember, if you really like what you're hearing, if you love these episodes, if you love all these stories about queer families, please consider joining my Patreon. I have various tiers that start at just $2 a month, and that's where you're going to get bonus content like video episodes dropped a day early on our YouTube channel. Ooh, and if you're watching the video, you'll see I am all prided up. I got my pride bandana. I got my pride flag flowing behind me. And I am wearing one of our shirts that we have in our merchandise store. This one said, I'm trying to stand up for you. And if you see the video, it's very comical, but it says Visibility Matters. And it's bomb. And we have various designs. We have various designs in our merchandise store. And you can find that at tpublic.com/the Queer Family Podcast. Also on our website at thequeerfamilypodcast.com. Don't forget to follow us on all the socials. We are on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube at The Queer Family Podcast. And that's where you're going to get those video episodes. Okay, that's all I had to say. I love y'all. I'm so glad you're tuning in. Share these things far and wide. And do not forget, it really makes a difference if you rate and review us wherever you listen to your pods, because we really want to get these stories out to an even broader audience so that we can normalize our families to an even higher degree. It's all in the name of representation and normalization, because visibility matters. It matters so much. All right. So I'm going to ask my lovely assistants, Helen and Beulah, my lovelies, my darlings, please roll that tape. They're not real. I don't have assistants. I still work a day job, so I can do this. Thank you, Helen and Beulah, my fake assistants. Roll the tape, please.
Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
Hello, Sydney and Britt. Welcome to the Queer Family Podcast Pride Extravaganza.
Thank you for having us.
Hi.
I'm so happy to have you. We've already, listeners, not going to lie, we've already been chatting way too long, and it's been fun. And I was like, we have to press record or we're just going to keep on going and never have an episode. So I'm super excited to have you. You're famous. If you don't know who they are, then you're just not on a computer or a phone or something. But there's anybody who's out there who doesn't know who you two are, let's give them your 30-second elevator pitch of who you are and why you're here talking to the Queer Fam Squad. On your marks, get set, go.
We are Sydney and Britt. We met in high school. We traveled abroad for a year for our first year of college to Israel. We came home and finally got together. In the last 10 years, we've gotten married. We just celebrated 7 years together. We have 3 donor-conceived babies, 2 through IUI, 1 through reciprocal IVF. I, Sydney, carried all 3 of them. I love being pregnant. I don't know why. And when we were pregnant with our first, we discovered that my dad was a sperm donor, and I've discovered 6 donor siblings since.
Boom.
Jeez.
You did it, Sydney. No, you did it.
Not 30. It was perfect.
Listen, we just talked about your whole story. I didn't think you were going to get it all in.
And because Britt kept piping in, but we do have 2 sides to the story, I guess.
Yeah.
How did it all start? Let's go into that.
We're at a club in Tel Aviv.
Oh.
And she has a story that, like, I basically persuaded her.
No, you blackmailed me. call a spade a spade.
No, that's your recollection of
it. I needed help. I was looking for my friends, and yeah, she said, I know where they are, but I won't let you, I won't
that tell. Sounds so like sleazy.
It was.
No.
Listen, it's not sleazy when it's a lesbian. Like, wait, do you both identify as lesbians?
I don't really know how I identify. I identify as Brit sexual.
Okay, I like that.
Then you can call me queer, gay, lesbian.
I don't take offense to it.
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha.
Like, however you want to. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I had only dated guys leading up to Brit.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like the innocent until proven guilty. Everybody assumes you're straight until you say you're not.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
And then you have to apparently choose a label, and it's a lot.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I'd only ever been with guys leading up to Brit. And then that first kiss story was me still being with guys. And I was looking for my friends, and Brit said, I'll take you to them, but you have to kiss me first.
Did you really say that?
So I kissed.
Not how it happened.
Okay. That's literally how it happened.
How did it happen?
No, it wasn't.
Yeah.
We were dancing and we made out while we were dancing.
No.
Yeah. Well, no. Did we not kiss on the dance floor?
But there was that
that moment.
I didn't even know where your friends were.
It must have been so hard to kiss Britt. I'm sure you didn't want to.
It was not so bad. I had to marry her.
Britt considers that our first kiss. I don't consider that our first kiss, even though we kissed.
But then what's your first kiss?
Like wanting...
quick hookup, like it's not even a full hookup. It was just like at a club, and then we parted ways. We didn't even like leave together, and we were having fun. Yeah. But then we, you know, maybe 18 months later, I'm in LA, she's in Maryland. We're like Skyping all the time together. Uh-huh. She's like in cold frost in Maryland, and I'm in like I have like palm trees and blue skies behind me. She's like, I'm over this. she transfers schools that winter. And she comes to LA.
I come back to LA. We're both from here.
Yeah, we're both from LA. I'm at like my university. She's at like a community college trying to figure her stuff out. She eventually transfers to my school. Mm-hmm. And then she meets me after work. And I know what you're referring to as like our first kiss, although it's not because we clearly kissed like a year earlier. It's a kiss. Like it doesn't need to be the beginning of our relationship.
Oh my gosh.
But it's a kiss.
Wait, hold on. Wait,
story's being taken too long to tell.
Let me backtrack though, because wait, Sydney, was that your first kiss of a female?
No, but like
no. But she's never been with women before.
But don't girls know how to tell a story? Isn't that like a thing that like girls do?
Yeah, when they're gay.
Yeah, when they're gay, pretty much. I mean, I guess I don't know. Listen, okay.
Am I asking the wrong people, wrong audience?
It's hard for us to know what the others do, right?
They all kiss girls, and then
I feel like when you talk to like women who identify as straight, they're like, yeah, of course we've made out with girls,
right?
Because interesting.
Everybody's a little bit gay.
So do I. I actually do, too. It's like a strong-held belief. Everybody's kind of gay. Come on.
Me too. It is.
She's men like, everybody's women. A little bit.
I think a lot of men are conforming to society.
Yeah, yeah.
Because of fear and just like inherited, you know.
Beliefs.
But yeah, everyone's a little gay.
Me
but
too.
But Britt was the totally first agree. Person that I was like seriously attracted to, wanted to be with, who happened to be female. Uh-huh. Yeah. And then when I realized that, I did seduce her. I did make all the first moves. Which I think is really ballsy.
I do too.
And then that was the first day of spring break. Mm-hmm. And then
we're in school still.
And we've been together literally every day ever since.
So it was a slow burn, but it was a U-Haul. It was a U-Haul.
Yeah. Is there any other way?
I know.
There's no other way.
I mean, a lot of these interviews turn into that. Oh, will you hold? Anytime I'm talking to lesbians, it's just a situation. It is what it is.
Well, I was just like, well, I love you and I don't want to lose you.
Around.
Yeah. We have no dicks to dick around with.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Exactly.
So we've been together ever since.
And that was 14 years ago. Around this time. Because it was around like Easter-ish.
Yeah.
Like spring break.
Why would you say Easter and not Passover?
That's funny.
It was literally during Passover.
And faith is a huge part of your lives, and we want to dig into that too. But before we get into that, let's talk about baby making. When did the conversation come up, and how did you decide you wanted to do it? Like, what was the conversation around it? We have a lot of decisions to make, right? Before we start,
it came up like date one.
Yeah, it was like one of those first dates because, like, how many kids do you want? You know, mm-hmm. It's like, and we both said four. Huh. And, I also like,
I don't know why we said four.
It was because obviously it's what we wanted, but like, I don't know. It's different. We have different approaches to it, right? She's always wanted to be a mom. When you asked her as a child, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? She'd be like, a mommy. Mm-hmm. And I like never really saw how I was going to be a mother or a parent. And I just figured it happens. Like I never put too much thought into it. We always knew we wanted kids. When we were engaged, we decided to, as our registry, we would instead have a...
We had a future family fund.
We had a future family fund. And we asked people to donate to that.
That's so smart.
We didn't know how we were going to get pregnant. We didn't know if we were going to do at home.
We weren't really even educated about it.
Yeah, right. We had no education about it, but we knew it was going to cost money. We didn't know how much.
Right.
We didn't.
Also, might I add, 14 years ago, there was so much less out there than there is now. Like so much less, right? At least now podcasts like this exist and, you know, accounts
social
like
media,
yours.
Instagram.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Well, that was it. Well, you know, when we were starting to interview fertility doctors, we turned to each other and said, yeah, like we have all these questions because we don't know the answers. They're not on the internet. And we told this to these doctors and we're like, what's the statistic? Like how effective would IVF be for us? How effective would IUI be for us? And they're like, well, I mean, they basically, you guys are healthy young people without, you know, the way to get pregnant. So I really can't tell you. And they kept saying like, we're just going to treat you like you're in the wild. And like, we're just two people in the wild having sex, but we're like, like to get pregnant.
These
and
two like, rabid lesbians just out there. Like,
the wild, just bumping. Women. I don't know. Like, so I was like, okay, let's put our own content out there. Cause I don't want to start the narrative as like women in the wild.
Yeah.
Like,
I think that when we started our Instagram page, it was to, it started as a way for us to document our journey as like a future love letter to our potential babies down the future so that they can see their story unfold. Of course, now it's kind of like the, I mean, at least it's the norm for us on what I see on my page because we're obviously like, yeah, you see what you want to see. But 4.5, 5 years ago, you didn't see a lot of people, couples documenting and sharing their story. Mm-mm. So we always knew we wanted to get pregnant. We always knew we wanted a big family. We had that future family fund. The first things that we kind of did simultaneously was find our doctor and a sperm bank. Mm-hmm. Finding the doctor was really easy for us. I do think that there is a plus to us being in Los Angeles and having access to not just quality doctors, but having access to doctors who treat families like ours.
Who don't just put the rainbow up on their website, but who are actually also doing the work and actually know how to treat us.
Our doctor is the same doctor that my cousins used.
It was a referral.
It was a referral from family. So I just trusted blindly. We did meet with him first and I was like, oh my God,
we
love him.
We interview many others. We were really happy the moment we met our fertility doctor and, you know, 3 for 3. So
yeah, he's been incredible. And then in terms of sperm bank, that was also kind of an easy choice for us. We again turned to our community and we have another two mom family, but they're my parents' age. So they're a generation ahead of us.
And their children are about 10 years younger than us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they've been through it and they used California Cryobank all those decades ago. And I was just like, I want reputable, I want well-known, I want safe, I want security. And California Cryobank checked all those boxes for us. Mm-hmm. Finding our sperm donor.
This is the search for Superman. Here it comes.
I do all of the organizing and planning and work and I start months in advance. And I think I've been on the website for about 4 months. I kept reconfiguring the search on like what I'm looking for. And I remember throwing my laptop to Britt. She was in the bedroom in the bed. And I threw it. I was like, you find him. What am I looking for? Like I have Britt. I just need sperm. You can't really go wrong with any of the sperm donors there. They're all screened and good quality. So like, but I'm not marrying this person.
But we get crazy.
We get crazy.
Yeah.
Not Britt. Not Miss Logical over here.
I found the guy in like
20 minutes?
20 minutes.
Wow, really?
20. Like I've been searching for 4 months.
Yeah.
wait.
I like, yeah.
Which is very us.
What were your parameters? Like, what did you keep changing?
I don't remember. I was like, I don't know, but like.
I can tell you what I looked up.
I just kept like, I'm like, do I care about eye color?
Right.
Not really. And of course, knowing what I know now and not only knowing what I know now as a donor recipient, but knowing what I know now as a person who works at California Cryobank, it is not just the two DNAs you're putting together. It is the whole DNA, genetic makeup, and history of both lifelines.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
All our kids have different color eyes.
What?
Nathan has blue eyes. Mm-hmm. I do not have blue eyes. Mm-hmm. Our donor does not have blue eyes. I have hazel and the donor has hazel.
Right. Well, that means you both have the recessive gene. So
exactly.
Well, right.
And it's not even both parents have recessive genes. They both have grandparents with blue eyes.
So it's a toss up.
The odds of that are low.
Right. Totally. Totally.
So I had a few parameters. I wanted them at least 6 feet tall because.
Well, I have two biological brothers from birth and Britt has a brother and we both have dads and all of them are like between 5'11 and 6'1", 6'2". So we were like, let's kind of create a genetic makeup that is them.
Yeah. Similar.
I also think I had it easier because I knew I didn't want to carry. Not that I didn't want to carry. It was that I wanted someone that could potentially look like, if Sydney and I had a baby, this mm-hmm. person like would be
like more, a meld.
Like a, yeah. Like, yeah, it would be a blend of us. Right. So I didn't look at Jewish ancestry, actually. I didn't care about ancestry or religion because I felt like anyone we chose or any child that we brought into our home would be raised with our influences.
Right.
Also, technically, by Jewish law, as long as the mother is Jewish, your children are Jewish, yeah. and we're both Jewish.
Right. And also, religion happens in the home, right? Like,
yeah.
yes.
You know, you can be born of a religion, but if you're not taught it or practice it at home, then you know what I mean? Like,
it's yeah. all for nothing.
And, but right. but California Crown Bank does have that as a filter. And
we then, did the height. We did brown hair. We yeah. all have brown hair in our family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that was just easy for us.
Personal preference. And then the last one was blood type.
Practical.
So
it makes so much yeah, sense. So
if we wanted to, if our kids ever needed anything, at least we would have, there's a potential, obviously, like you can't guarantee your child's blood type, but you know, it definitely improves odds.
But right. those three filters alone brought it down to like less than a dozen.
You know, it was like maybe 15, right? And then I kind of narrowed it out. Like there are donors, California Cryobank has been around for so long that there are donors that donated, you know, 40 years ago, 30 years ago, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago. And so I really wanted someone that was more age appropriate to us mm. so that if our children connected with them, they would have, they would be alive.
I didn't know this.
And they, yeah, I mean, we've been doing IVF and artificial, you know, insemination since the 50s, 60s. I mean,
I don't remember like, how old the donors were that we opened, but like
70, you know, like they were born 1975, 1965. Right. Like, are they going to be around or, right. you know,
we wanted someone age appropriate. So when you only have a few to pick from, you know, you open each one in a new tab mm-hmm. and then we very quickly X'd out of the ones that we didn't consider age appropriate. Mm-hmm. We wound up choosing a donor who was born the same year as us.
Oh.
So yeah. obviously it doesn't guarantee that they're going to be around, but we think it increases the chances that if we think we're age appropriate to have kids, then so is this potential person in the future. Well, they'll be at the same points in life as yeah, we are potentially.
Right. Like,
yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Don't know.
When we were picking our donor, I feel like they were all of the same age and they were all younger than us. Like they were all born in the 80s. So I didn't notice any from before, but that's interesting. It might've just been how our search trickled down and we didn't see any of the older ones, but that's interesting. I didn't know that about the bank.
In 20 years when, or 19 years or 18 years when our kids are like going to look for, you know, information about them, I want them to feel like if that person wants a relationship with them and they're open to relationship, it's not like a grandfather experience, but more of a parent experience.
And then we literally went straight to the health history, the expanded family health history, where it's siblings, parents, yeah. and aunts, uncles, grandparents that are all biologically related to the donor.
I literally opened everyone. I was like, nope, too much, yeah. too much. And you know what? We have three kids now. I feel like we got top shelf sperm. So yeah. like,
I think you did
really
well.
Happy.
So you narrowed it down real quick, Britt, and then Sydney got on board.
And we had to, and Sydney didn't mention this, we had to because we had our appointment like in 4 days or 7 days.
Yeah. So you finally did, you got it, you did it. And then I want to know, Britt, how did you feel about being a non-bio parent?
I never had an issue, I think. I knew I never wanted to carry and not in like any particular reason. I think it just wasn't in like not something of interest to me, mm-hmm. but I knew I wanted kids. So I felt like, you know, I've always thought in my head adoption or fostering a child or, you know, so I feel like it was never a consideration. I was there through the pregnancy. I was there through the doctor's appointments, all that stuff. So, and if you see the way I love on these kids, it's like,
oh.
they are literally me.
Yeah, 100%.
And people actually ask me so much. They're like, how do you feel that this, you know, Zoe is your DNA. And I'm like, literally have,
there's no difference.
There's no difference.
Same, right.
You know?
Yeah.
I would do anything for all of them. So
yes.
There's no difference. I am telling you all this in hindsight, right? Like I really don't remember those thoughts beforehand.
You never had those thoughts.
I don't think I did. But I also wasn't having these conversations to like really elaborate and go deep into
right.
it.
But Britt's also a gem of a human being. So like, for me, it's like of no surprise.
I'm a saint.
You are a saint. Working with California Cryobank and Donor Egg Bank and seeing what people do, how much they go through to have children, biological or not, I get it. Like, I empathize and I sympathize, and I would walk until my feet came off to have any kind of child mm-hmm. ever. Mm-hmm. And that's not necessarily like if it happened or didn't happen for Brit, it would happen or didn't happen for Brit.
You're not alone in that. Like, a lot of time I've interviewed a lot of couples, right? In same-sex couples. And a lot of times there's one in the couple who feels the same way as you, Brit, which is always like the best scenario, because then it's an easy decision on who's going to carry, how this is all going to go. You know, it's harder when you both feel exactly the same way. And that's kind of one of the conundrums
yeah.
of our families.
We've gotten lots of like, well, why don't you guys just carry at the same time? And I'm like, are you moving in with us to help raise?
It's not logical.
I was like, that's because people are like, oh, well, then let's fix this. Like, if Brit doesn't want to, then no, she must want to. Right. And I'm like,
I have no, not every, you know what is interesting?
Not every woman wants to.
A lot of women in my family approach me and say, you're going to regret this. Little do they know that Cindy was already pregnant with our second.
And I was a little like, hormonal, and I was like, we got to leave this establishment because yeah. I'm not
like,
happy right
it
now.
It was so uncomfortable. I was like, I was just like smiling and nodding because wow. like that's like to me like just the easiest way to stop a conversation right. by like letting them say what they have to say and then like, you know,
but that's,
not having anything.
But what about women who don't want to carry and have kids at all?
Right.
Like, that's totally valid also.
Exactly. And this is the kind of shit we go through as women and the kind of shit we go through as queer parents, right? The people say the craziest stuff to us. They really do.
The craziest stuff.
They really do.
So yeah, for us, the whole choosing who was going to carry was easy. Like mm-hmm. me.
Right.
Actually.
But the first time we knew it was going to be, we knew it was going to be me. We knew we were going to do IUI. We wanted to try as naturally as possible. Mm-hmm. I also have PCOS. So I figured that I was going to have this huge uphill battle uh-huh. with my hormones not working.
Right.
So I wanted to do monitoring. I wanted to be on Clomid. Mm-hmm. I wanted to do an HCG trigger shot, all of it. So we did all of that. And then we got pregnant on the first shot.
Oh, whoa. Good job.
And then I was in denial about it until Thea was about 4 months old. Like,
like out. Like, not 4 months pregnant.
Oh, sorry. Old. When she was, when Thea was 4 months
old. I heard you. I heard that. I definitely heard that. I mean, because when it happens on the first try, we didn't expect that. We're not ready for that.
And not only that, I was like, okay, fine, I'm pregnant, but when am I losing it?
Right.
So I spent most of my pregnancy right. like waiting right. for
and
something.
My naiveness was like, oh, you just get pregnant. Like there's like Brit no just, complications.
Yeah, Brit was like, we're going to go and get pregnant.
No, I was just, I'm the baby of my whole family tree.
Yeah.
She's the oldest one. She witnessed her mom going through fertility issues. I now know my parents went through it, but I never witnessed it.
Right.
You know? So it was just
my family's also very open and talks about it, and her family is way more conservative and doesn't. Mm-hmm. So we got pregnant. I was terribly sick for like 18, 19 weeks. Still decided to get pregnant again.
Same.
It was brutal and wonderful. And we did a home birth with Thea, and it was incredible. And I delivered on her due date. So of course, 40 weeks come December 1st and everybody left the house because who goes into labor on their
nobody.
Due date, especially with your first. So everybody left. And then I realized I was in labor and I was like, I'm going to call Brit last because she's going to freak out. So I called her last and she freaked out.
I called my mom. I said, Mom, get over there now.
Her mom was already there. I'd already called Dana and was like, I need you to come and babysit me. And everybody showed up. We had an 8-hour labor. It was beautiful. Wow. I got to go in the hot tub for a little bit. It was wonderful. It was great. So about what, like 7-8 months later, I was like, okay, we should probably start talking and planning for baby number two. Brit's like, you're crazy, but fine, whatever. And I was like, you really should carry. It's a beautiful experience. Brit's like, I don't really want to. And I was like, no, you really should. And after a few months, we were in the canyon. We were driving back to my parents' house. Yeah. And Brit's like, fine, I'll do it.
Okay.
And I just started.
I had to like psych myself up for like months.
And I was like, I just started sobbing. And she's like, what's wrong? And I was like, I really want to carry again. And she's like, why on earth did you just spend months trying to get me to do it when I don't want to and you do? And I was like, well, I thought we were taking turns because like, that's so cute and that's what we should do. And she's like,
that's what we told people.
Should do according to who? Right.
We make the rules in these queer families. Hey.
I think has always been kind of a gift. We did that with our wedding too. I remember going to my mom and I was like, Mom, I don't know how to do this. And who should stand here? And what? And my mom's like, there are no rules to weddings. People think that there are these traditions. It should be whatever you two want to make for the rest of your life.
Valid. She's smart.
Yeah. My mom's fantastic. Yeah. So we were ready to start trying. And I told Britt, I was like, I want to start trying because we're going to do IUI again. And it's not going to take on the first try again. So we should probably start like, psyching my body out.
Again, I'm still like naive to like fertility.
I was exclusively breastfeeding Thea. I'm pretty sure I was breastfeeding her during my second IUI transfer to get pregnant the second time. And we left the room to go pay for our insemination. And Britt looked at me and she goes, we just closed on our house. And I was like, I think we just got pregnant.
Oh my God.
And she's like, why would you say that? Like, I'm sure we did, but like, why? And I was like, because when it rains, it pours.
Yeah.
So 2 weeks later, I peed on a stick and it was positive in seconds.
Holy, you're just meant for this.
Also, her mom was there.
Oh, my mom has been at the conception of all of our children.
Of course.
I love her mom. So like, it's not like I'm like, your mother's with us. It's not like that.
But she now has to be at the conception of all of our children because she's obviously the good luck charm.
Right. Okay. So that happened.
We got pregnant. I was 11 months postpartum when I got pregnant. We had Nathan when Thea was 20 months old.
We got the keys August to our house. The same day he was born.
August 2020. And if that date jogs a memory, it's because we were deep into the pandemic.
Yeah, we were.
So again, I had another home birth, which I was really grateful. I was mentally, physically, emotionally prepared for because hospitals were the last places most people wanted to be. We had Nathan and life got really difficult. We had two kids under two. Thea was full-time at home. I joke, but not really, that I had 6 full weeks of recovery with Thea and about 6 hours with Nathan. Yeah. Like, wrap it up, mom. You got a toddler to take care of. And we didn't send Thea to school until she, like the day before she turned 2. So my entire newborn postpartum, that fourth trimester with Nathan, I had a toddler home with me the whole time.
That's hard, man.
And she was like tandem feeding.
Oh my God. I hated it.
Yeah.
And there are some women, everybody was like, we are waiting for the photos of you tandem feeding. And I was like, this is actually awful.
Oh God. It can be such a hard time. And it's the fourth trimester. You're supposed to be like really secluded and, you know, you're supposed to have that time. And it's hard when you already have a kid.
Yeah. It was like just a shock to all of the senses, I think. So we knew that when we were ready for number 3, we needed both kids in school. We needed them to be well-adjusted. Shy of 2 was really hard. Zoe came when Nathan was 2.5. So far, it's been a lot.
You just had Zoe. How old is Zoe?
Zoe's 2 months old.
Oh my God, I did a baby. Congrats.
Yeah, she's right there. She's sleeping.
Conception just as easy as the other two?
Longer process. We did reciprocal IVF.
Oh, right. Yeah, oh, yeah, so yeah. So then you did reciprocal. So now
we did Brit's egg.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think I took it like a champ. I'm not going to lie. The shots. Like I felt like, I think I did.
You took the shots very well. The shots that I had to administer.
Mm-hmm. Hers were gnarly. I'm not going to lie. Hers were gnarly and I felt bad every time I had to do it.
So the retrieving, when you do the egg retrieval, those needles are like super teeny tiny, super skinny. They go in your skin like butter. Mm-hmm. You could do it on yourself. And I've had to give myself shots like that for years with PCOS medication. Mm-hmm. So when Britt was like, you need to do it, I was like, okay.
I know. I've had to do both because I've done IVF just personally. Yeah. So I know.
Britt was a champ doing, like, having me give her the shots, the retrieval itself. It was the recovery.
I had never been put under anesthesia. Mm-hmm. So I think my body just had like its first reaction to it. And it was just really tough.
For like 3 weeks.
Until my next period. Yeah. You know, I have like a very strict workout regimen and all this stuff. And they were like, yeah, after 6 days, you can go lift again. And I was just like, okay. So like day 7 or day 6, I went and lifted. I would say a mediocre workout. Yeah. It definitely wasn't an easy, like easy one. And the next day, I was nauseous.
I was bad.
Feverish.
Oh, shit.
And, you know, we have a great relationship with our fertility doctor. So like we were on a texting basis. And he's like, you should probably wait until your next period to do anything. And right. I was just like, oh.
Interesting. Good to know.
I had to really take it easy. And it was like the fact that I had to go through that sucked.
The recovery for her was brutal. What's interesting about IVF, I mean, I guess with IUI too, I don't know why this felt so different, but choosing the day to transfer the embryo was really significant for me.
For her. And I was just like, no, no.
So I wanted
this makes sense.
I wanted to transfer right away. I wanted to transfer in like the beginning, mid-May, but we were leaving for Toronto.
Biosib.
To one of my biosib's weddings.
Oh my God, I can't wait to talk about this.
Yeah. So I have six bio siblings that I know of. My dad was a sperm donor and one of my sisters was getting married and obviously we were going to go. And I really wanted to, like, you know, when you do IVF and you do the embryo transfer, you're pregnant until proven otherwise. Yeah. So like, I wanted to be that. Yeah. And Britt was like, really, can you wait like two extra weeks to do your transfer? You can travel. We don't have to do any of the shots. You could drink.
Yeah.
You can have a good time. Also the difference
in, like, run down from any like drugs on
right. The difference of those 3 weeks, one would have had us have a January baby and one would have had a February baby. And we were still concerned with COVID. And Britt's like, God forbid something goes wrong. Like, if we have to go to a hospital, if we travel, like, I want to make sure that, like, the wave of COVID is down.
It was bad. And I was like, you really want to, like, have a baby during, like, a winter spike? It's like, how about we just not? And
like a few extra weeks for potential of being a little bit safer with delivery date. So I begrudgingly was like, fine, I'll wait. And we went in for our first embryo transfer and now we have baby Zoe.
Wow. You're one of the only couples I have ever spoken to who planned it out like we all do, had plans, and it actually went the way you wanted it to. Like, that doesn't happen.
I have a lot of guilt with my fertility. I have guilt with being in the fertility community. I think part of the reason why it's hard for me to identify and pick a label in the LGBTQ world is because I just fell in love with someone and it happened to be a girl. Mm-hmm. And there was no, like,
adversity.
There was no big traumatic or dramatic coming out story to my family. It was just like, this is the next person
She's
I'm dating.
A really progressive family.
So, like, I feel bad that I don't have heartache and pain with so many of these big things that have caused so much heartache and pain for others. I feel like I keep waiting for the other shoe to drop, and it's been a hard process for me to share openly about because I fell in love and we got married. Yeah. There was no issues. I wanted to have a baby. We got pregnant. I have a lot of guilt around both of those things.
I don't think you should have any guilt around that. It's beautiful. It's freaking beautiful.
We feel very, very blessed.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's a wonderful story and it's a wonderful, like, you have kind of a blueprint for how things can go and in the most beautiful, awesome way. And we need those stories.
Which I think is why we are also so open and talk so candidly about my dad being a sperm donor and all of these bio siblings that we call each other bio sibs. Every year we get together, we call that bio fest. My dad is called bio dad. So like, those are the names
fest is happening July 15th.
Oh my God, I love it. Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about this because you told me before we started recording that, well, all the while you're going through this donor search, this never entered your dad's mind to tell you.
Or my mom. And my mom knew that my dad was a sperm donor because they were dating in med school. My mom was in social work school. My dad was in dental school at NYU. And like sperm banks still do to this day, they tend to target
medical students.
Students. And my dad was approached. My dad was up to his eyeballs in student debt. Mm-hmm. He came from no money. And he was like, well,
you're going to pay me for this?
This is great. Like, I can actually pay off some of my debt. I can afford my books now. He loved the science behind it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's like, if this helps somebody, great.
So he decided to do it.
Yeah. We still don't know how many times he did it, but I do have six siblings.
So when did you find out and how did this go down? And we have to unpack this because I've heard from so many donor conceived people about, you know, what this, I want to hear your story.
My dad did 23andMe when his father died.
Yeah.
Okay.
He was like, I want to know more about my family. And then his results came back and he was like, cool. I'm 99.9% Ashkenazi Jew.
Mm-hmm. Nothing exciting. So he just like turned off notifications and never heard, like, never logged in again.
My aunt connected with a dog breeder who she got her dog from. And she said, hey, this might sound weird, but my brother-in-law is looking for a man named Jay Grossman. And I see you're connected to him.
For Facebook, like mutual
friends. Is it possible that he could be his father? And my aunt is like, knowing Jay, probably. And it's my dad's sister-in-law. So this is my mom's sister. Like,
she has no idea about the sperm donation.
She didn't know about it, but it also, we wouldn't put anything past my dad. Mm-hmm. That's just my dad.
Right.
So my aunt called my mom. She's like, you need to sit down. I need to tell you something about Jay. I don't know if you know about this. My mom starts laughing. My mom's like, oh my God, Jay totally did that. I remember this.
She says she's been waiting for this call her whole life because she knew something was
going to happen. My mom wanted like 8 kids. My dad wanted one. My dad's like, I need 23andMe. I don't even know if I know the log. And Britt, of course, hacked her way into my dad's account. And not only was Will waiting there, we had Sabrina and Liz. 3 50% matches to my dad.
Oh. One in Toronto, one in Long Island, and one in Missouri.
Okay. So all of a sudden, you find out you have donor siblings. All of a sudden, you find out your dad
is a sperm donor. And I'm about 3 months pregnant with my first donor conceived baby.
And so how do you feel?
I was like, didn't know what to think. Britt goes, without missing a beat, oh my God, this is so amazing.
Right.
I was like, what? She's like, well, when our kids have questions, they can actually go to biological aunts and uncles and talk to them.
Right.
Every time I say that, I literally get full body goosebumps. In that moment, I was like, we love these people. They need to be in our life.
Right. Because they have a perspective that your kids are going to have. Yeah.
Since then, we've now connected with 6. So there's 6 total. So when my mom and dad got married, they had me and my 2 younger brothers. Separate from the 3 of us, there's 6 of them. Mm-hmm. So together, there's my dad loves telling people he has 9 kids.
From like 5 women or something like that.
Yeah, my dad's.
He's a super dude.
You can make a joke out of it.
Out of all of them, that the boys were told that they were donor conceived from the get-go. And the women and the girls were not.
Interesting. This is the question I was going to ask.
And out of the 6, only one of them has same-sex parents. Now, and one of them is the boy who is told.
Right. Yeah. Of course he was told same-sex parents.
Yeah.
One of my sisters did 23andMe because it was a Christmas gift. One of them, her dad was terminally ill and went in to go see if she could be a donor match for
a kidney,
a liver, something. And the doctor was like, not only are you not a match, you're not biologically related to this man.
That's not your dad. Yeah.
So she did 23andMe in hopes of finding her dad.
Oh my God.
The other one found out in a terrible, terrible way. The dad that raised her was a horrible man. And had a very mean, angry streak to him. And it wasn't until things kind of got really bad before her mom was like, I have something to tell you. That's not your biological father. And the relief that washed over her to be like, thank God I am not biologically tied to that man. Oh. So she did it to find her biological father. And then Liz, her mom was diagnosed with breast cancer. Her dad took off, was like, I don't want to be a part of this.
And her aunt, after a close friend of her mother's, was like, he's not even your dad. So like, you know.
There's hope that you actually still have a living parent out there.
Wow. And of all of these siblings, because you hear about these donor-conceived people having like real betrayal.
Trauma.
Yeah. Right? And have you seen that? And
my 2 brothers, no. They were the ones that were told at a young age. So for them, they always knew. Sabrina had a really wonderful dad. She was the one with terminal cancer. It made her love her dad even more because she really got that her parents went to the end of the world to do whatever they could to have her. Hillary was relieved. Mm. That was the one that was relieved to know. But then one of my other sisters, the one that did it just as a fluke, she shared with us, she was like, I don't know if I would have been able to handle it knowing younger.
Oh, wow. Unless she had been told right from birth, though.
Perhaps.
That's true.
If it's all she knew.
Yeah. If that's all she knew, then maybe.
Right.
But she's also just like, I have a bonus dad. And she always texts like, hey, dad, like, I'm in town. Like, and she's like super just like, I have an extra parent. This is awesome.
I think there was that initial shock. Mm-hmm. But I think once they connected with us and we had some space to like talk with each other and they had times to talk with their family that raised them.
We really love each other.
Mm. Yeah.
We're like really good friends. Well, it's like family. Mm-hmm. It's like they've known each other for our whole life.
2 of them have gotten married since we've met them and we've been to all of the weddings.
Mm-hmm. We've done Vegas together.
We literally have done, we call it BioFest and we make shirts.
I love it. It's how it can turn out, you know? In the positive aspect, how it should turn out, right? It doesn't always turn out this way, but it gives hope.
Yeah.
You have to give a lot of credit to her parents because they're both just like, yes.
Right.
They all give credit to my mom because my mom was a yes to my dad connecting with them and talking with them. And of course, my mom is like, well, of course.
Right.
Like, I always wanted 8 kids and now I have 9.
Right. Well, and and that's like, this is the best case scenario of how these things can go, right? And we all, most of us queer families are going to have to deal with something like this down the line, mm-hmm. possibly, a lot of us.
Yeah.
We're part of the donor sibling registry with California Cryobank.
And we've connected with one on social media, and it's just like we love chatting with them. They're actually really Jewish as well.
They're a straight Jewish couple, yeah. And I'm obsessed.
Yeah. And
well, let's talk about that then, because you are very open and vocal about the fact that you are raising your kids with your religion, right? And it's very important to you. Let's dig into that, because as queers, that's not necessarily across the board thing. And why did you decide to stay with the religion? And, you know, let's dig in.
You know, I think it's one of the number one questions. One of the top two questions we're asked all the time is how do we make both work? How do we make like the gay side of us and the Jewish side of us? How does our religion allow it? And I'm like, there are so many different sects of Judaism. I think Britt and I both identify more spiritually with our Judaism. So that helps. We also live in Los Angeles where we're
exposed and we have access to more progressive, mm-hmm. you know.
Not only do we have synagogues and temples here who are accepting of all families, there are some temples that are like just gay temples. Like it's
one of our friends runs one of the allowed LA temples, and she's a queer rabbi.
The temple we're with, we have a gay cantor. Like it's just the norm here. So again, like we live in this really kind of comfortable bubble where we can be whoever we want to be and it's safe.
Mm-hmm. People ride us for like, you know, being in California, more taxes, higher cost of living. It's like, I'd rather pay my extra taxes to have live in a community, inclusive area community, and having like our children be in a religious school with other queer families.
Our daughter is in her actual class. She has, there's two other families that are
donor conceived,
kids. Same sex.
Oh, wow.
Families.
So, and this is a private Jewish school.
Yeah.
And they're both Jewish.
Yeah. It really matters where you with the bubble matters for us. Like nobody I know is going to move to Florida any day soon.
I don't even want to fly in and out of there.
No, I know.
We were both raised Jewish. She was actually raised Orthodox and I was raised conservative, erring on the side of reform and reconstructionist. But I think it wasn't until we were engaged that I realized how much I identify with my Judaism. We met with our rabbi a bunch of times to kind of create the ceremony and what we wanted. And we opted to leave. Our ceremony was done in English and in Hebrew. So for every section that was read, it was done in both languages. Like most other languages, there's a male and female of the verbs and the words. And we had her keep it as is. So there was male and female words being used to identify both of us. So we kept that part the same. And then the part that we had our rabbi describe was, she said, look, we're keeping the words the same, not because this is a man and a woman, but because we all encompass and embody masculine and feminine sides in each of us. And I was like, perfect. Mm-hmm.
That works.
That's how we made it work for us. We both got to step on the glass and we share all the responsibilities. There's not one person that wears the pants in the relationship.
That's my most hated comment. Mm-hmm. Who's the man in the relationship? Oh, it's like, there is no man in this relationship.
Yeah.
But we are both wearing pants.
Yeah. But, you know, that's the, I can't speak for most religions, but I do know in Judaism, what I love about it is that it's a spectrum of like very conservative, very Orthodox, to Reconstructionist, which is
spiritual, musical,
and almost like more modern in terms of like
take the pieces that fit for you and make it work.
Yeah, and it's more of being a good human and just like how to like having something that binds you to humanity. It's more of like how do we take care of refugees and how do we
take care of the planet?
The Jews were refugees after they left Israel. Like, you know, if no one took care of us back then, thousands of years ago, we would not be where we are today. So that is why we need to take care of, you know, refugees now. Like it just applies. And it has nothing to do with like, we have to only take care of ourselves.
Right.
Or like, we have to take care of other Jews. No, it's like humanity. Mm-hmm. And I actually always say like, the reason I love Judaism is because, and why I believe in God and all that stuff is because I want my kids to feel like there's someone they can talk to, like whether it's in their head or at night or out loud or whatever. But I also want them to feel like there's something like
bigger than us.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm going to do the right thing because he's watching. Like when I was a kid, I always felt like that. It's like, I need to do the right thing now because God's watching. And it's like, it just made me make good decisions in like times where people could choose.
It was a guide,
you know,
It's motivation to be good. It's motivation to be a kind and good person in the universe.
Yeah. Yeah. It just, it's something that binds you to humanity. I think that's what the biggest thing.
And it's what's important to you, right? And yeah. And that's the beauty of our families. There is no mold. Mm-hmm. And so we get to decide how we do this. We get to decide. And that's why we're all so different with our families, with how we handle faith, how we handle all. And that's the beauty. And the lesson is, it's none of anybody's business. It's not your business how we're raising our kids. We're raising them to be kind humans, and that matters. But all the rest, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. We got it.
Yeah. I think some of my proudest moments of being a mom is when my kids come home and the songs that they choose to, like, you know, they'll pick up their little play guitar or their drums, and the songs they're singing are Shabbat songs and Hanukkah songs year round.
It's cute.
The Hanukkah songs are the ones that kill me with the year round part, but like, it'll be like Tuesday and like, the song that Nathan is singing in the car on the way to school is the blessings. So every Friday for Shabbat, you light the candles. He's singing that prayer.
I love that. I actually love that ritual.
I'm like, I don't think I've ever been more proud of anything ever than watching Nathan. Just, that's what he sings in the car. Like, not Cocomelon.
Yeah. Good for him. Good for him. Nobody needs to hear Cocomelon anymore. It's so wonderful to hear your story and to hear your perspective on things. And like, as somebody who was not personally raised with religion at all, had no religion, I don't have any of that dogma or whatever. Like, I don't have it. So I don't miss it, you know, and I'm raising my kids kind of the way I was raised. And to me, that's great and wonderful. And I turned out a beautiful human, and I care about all the things you just said, but we all, you know, we do what feels the best and most right for us. And it's so wonderful to hear everybody's different experiences. And some of us identify more with this and some of us identify more with that. And that's the beauty. And that's why we have to tell our stories. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm so happy you two have been sharing your lives for everyone to, like, you're sharing so that we're normalizing and we're uplifting and we're highlighting how beautiful our families and our relationships can be. And I'm grateful to you.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to get something printed and made for our home, but the thing that we say the most in our house is visibility matters.
Yeah.
And when we travel, like, look, we, like you said, we're not planning on going to Florida anytime soon, but my family has had a annual tradition where we always go to Zion National Park. Mm. So that's in Utah. Mm. So we don't not go to Utah. We go to Utah and we hold hands and we kiss and we have our family there because visibility matters. It's a tourist trap. That's where a lot of people like to go and you know, see at the national park there. So you're seeing people all walks of life. I like when we're there because we get to kind of leave our little gay and Jewish mark in Utah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We intentionally, like, she turned to me and we turned to each other really. And I was just like, it's like a small town. You walk and you window shop, you get ice cream, fudge, all that stuff. And I'm like, just like, let's, you know, up the PDA, like, let's hold hands. Let's
like,
kiss.
If there's like, one kid somewhere
like,
watching,
like, this is the place that visibility matters.
Oh my
know?
God. Good for you. And that is scary to do. I find it very scary.
I can get that. I get that.
And also, but when you become a parent, a queer parent, you have to do this kind of stuff because your kids are watching.
Well, there's that. It was in our vows at our wedding. We said that we wanted our kids not only to know how much that they are loved, but for them to know how much we love each other. Mm-hmm. I think that that's missing in a lot of marriages.
I remember seeing my parents being like PDA, like holding hands, hand in like their back pocket, kind of like cuddly, like at a grocery store once. And I was like, what's going on? Like, that's
and that
normal.
Was, that was the norm. And that was the norm for my family.
Yeah. And you're carrying on. And you know what? We need couples like you doing that. We need parents like you doing that because a lot of us, some of us are still really afraid to have PDA. Like it's hard. It's scary for many, many queer folks out there.
And a lot of people approach us at grocery stores and like recite Bible verses.
But they've all been very kind.
No, I mean, not really. The fact that they're doing that.
Well, look, I get it. They were raised a certain way and they believe certain things. That's totally fine and valid. I never felt invalidated. Yeah. Uh-huh. And I never felt scared. I never felt like we were, you know, like there's rallies where things get out of control and it's all Bible verses and people are threatening and there's violence and anger.
Yeah,
I've never felt that.
Mm-hmm.
And in the same vein, like, look, like I remember when Britt and I were planning our honeymoon and I was just looking haphazardly at all these places. And Britt goes, just make sure wherever you're looking, it's accepting of gay relationships. Right. And mm-hmm. I was like, what?
Right.
And even if it's not a violent thing, like the Maldives is not like a violent place for queer people to go.
Or Jewish.
I don't want to support an economy with my tourism money in a place that, you know, outlaws and imprisons queer people.
So yeah, like, so we've always had to kind of weigh the pros and cons. Part of it is we definitely need to be safe. But now that we have kids, we take it obviously even further. We need to make sure that it's safe. But we're not just a same-sex couple. We're a same-sex Jewish couple. Mm-hmm. And Jews have the anti-Semitism that's been on the rise these last couple of years is scary. Yes. I think I'm actually more scared to be out and Jewish than out and gay in some parts of the world. So I just kind of feel like it's a double whammy and I want the kids to see the world and I want to go places where we're welcomed. And like Britt said, I want to support cities and towns and countries that support us. And like, look, we're going to still,
you're still going to go to Zion. Listen, it's important, but
right.
And visibility starts here, right? We always put our flag out for the month of June. Mm-hmm. And last June, one of our neighbors said something about like, he's a retired cop and he was like, oh, I'm glad I'm not on the force these days. I don't know how to deal with you people. And so I have kept our flag up the entire year.
Yeah. Don't take it down.
And then, a house on our street went up.
The house across the street from us went up for sale. So then I was like, great, our flag's out. Cause I, need to let people know.
You
exactly.
need to know. Like, you need to put they have those stickers for the car with all the kids. You need like a cutout on your lawn. If you have a lawn, like you need a cutout of the two women and the three children. Yeah. Just so you know.
Yeah.
We're here.
The flag out every time a house down the street in our like little area goes for sale. I'm like,
We just keep our flag out year round now.
Yeah.
Because I love it.
It's pretty also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
our daughter's favorite color is rainbow. So it works.
Yeah. I think most of our kids' favorite colors are rainbow at some point because we inundate
my
them.
Favorite color growing up.
It's part of the agenda.
our gay agenda.
Yes, it is.
But just don't tell anyone.
Yeah. I have one last question for you. And this is a loaded question. Sorry to throw it on you. But what does pride mean to you?
It goes back to visibility matters. It's a celebration of who we are today. It is an accomplishment of where we've come and where we have yet to go. It is a moment where we get to reflect on the not so pride celebratory stuff. It is part of that too. It's the other side of it.
I think it's a celebration of everything that we've really had to go through. I think that it is an opportunity to say we're not going back in the closet and we are here. We are grateful and proud of where we've come and how we've gotten there. So, I think it all, it has so many folds now for so many people. It's an opportunity to like come out. It's an opportunity to educate others. It's an opportunity to like feel like included. But I think at the end of the day, we had to deal with police raids and being arrested and attacked and brutalized. And so it's like, no, we're taking our power back and that's what pride means. And it goes back to visibility matters. That's how we can show our pride all the time. Not just in, June.
I love that. I love that answer. That was a good answer without any thought before. I just sprung it on you. Good job. You too. Really has been such a pleasure. I feel like we could really talk for hours. And so I might have to just bring you back and we're going to dive into more stuff because, parenting as a queer parent, we could talk for hours about this. So
parenting, period.
Well, yeah, there's that too. Yes. Yeah. Take out the gay part and it's still a lot. It's still a lot. So I'm so happy that I got to meet you and that you're a part of the Queer Fam squad now. And, I want you back and I want to know all of the details and I can't wait for the fourth baby. So you have to keep me posted.
We have our BioFest coming up. So all the BioSibs are going to be together again in July. And then, baby number four, hopefully will come within the next couple of years.
Oh my God. This is amazing.
And we're happy to come back whenever you're free.
Yeah. I would love it. Okay. This has been just such a joy. Mwah. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Queer Family Podcast.
Well, folks, I really hope you enjoyed this episode of the Queer Family Podcast. And if you did, you got to do all the things. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review to this here little show wherever you listen or watch. Those things make a huge difference in getting this little show out to the rest of the world. And we really want to do that in the name of visibility, right? And inclusion. So let's do that. And you can always join my Patreon and get the video episode dropped a day early so you can be the first to be in the know at patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast. And make sure you're following me on all the socials, The Queer Family Podcast on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube. And go get your Pride merchandise. I have so many fun designs, so many different products in my merchandise store. You're going to find that at teepublic.com/thequeerfamilypodcast. You can also find it on my website at thequeerfamilypodcast.com. Go do that. Share this. Rate it. You know what you can also do? Did you know that you can also take a friend's phone and just subscribe and rate and review to my show on their phone too? You can totally do that. I mean, I'm not opposed to that. Yeah, I'm really not opposed, especially your straight friends. Why not? They're allies. Let's just get all the subscribers we can. Why not? You know what I mean? And if you like this here episode, feel free to listen to the next one or watch it on YouTube. We got a lot of fun stuff happening on our YouTube channel. So I love you all. Thank you for tuning in. Please continue to tune in and continue to share this with your folks, because the more visible we are, the better this world's going to become. I wholeheartedly believe it. So tune into next week. It's a really good one. I can't believe these folks said yes. I'm still in shock. Okay, that's it. Tune in. I love y'all. Mwah. I'll be back soon in your ears.
Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.